And welcome to season 3 of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. I hope everyone had a wonderful and relaxing holiday. I'm so stoked to be back with series 3. Thank you for all who've listened, shared, and supported. Please keep it up. I appreciate it. Our first episode today, we will be talking to Hannah Fushihara all about scent work, how you can implement this with your own animals, in the shelter setting, and more. Hello, Hannah. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing awesome.
Surprisingly, we've never met in person. We probably will soon, but it's a small world, and I met you through the behavior world, specifically even a smaller world, which I still don't understand, the cat behavior world, because everyone loves cats, and I'm like, how are they a niche? I really don't get it, but it has worked out in our favor, so I'll take it. So I always like to start, just because my guests may not be familiar with all your amazing work, so sure. I always like to start by asking my guests to briefly share their career path, and then how did you find your passion of, we're talking about nose work for dogs and cats, everybody.
Sure. So I got started in animal behavior because I had adopted a dog who, at the time, it was the late 90s, and the kind of training that was still very, very, very prevalent was the kind of training that, you know, like, I didn't even realize that I didn't know anything. So I went into it with like, okay, this person is telling me to, you know, use a prong collar when I have told my instructor that my dog is reactive towards other dogs. He seems to be scared. And, you know, I used it once, popped it on his neck, and he yelped and jumped into the air, and I just took it off him, you know, during the class, and I said, you know, I can't use it.
Yeah.
And so at the time, it was all like Yahoo groups.
Oh, I remember Yahoo. Oh my goodness.
Find information about what else could I possibly do, because, you know, all these other people that I have even like met in my building and are trying to help me, like, they're telling me things that I'm not comfortable doing.
Right.
And so I just went down that rabbit hole. I luckily was able to find out about clicker training. And I just kind of figured out some stuff on my own, basically, like through like the very basic, like early website, like VHS tapes, ordering them in the mail. And so like I got started that way a little bit, just getting my feet wet with like what's possible. And then I started to volunteer at the animal control facility in New York City at the time. And I was very, very lucky. I don't know if the people who are listening to your podcast know Melissa Taylor, who is at Friends for Life in Houston. She was on
an episode. Definitely go check it out, everybody. See, again, small, beautiful world.
So I just got lucky that she was the behavior director at the time at the shelter that I was volunteering at. And I was watching her and another trainer take dogs into a special room that had no windows. And I didn't know what they were doing in there. And they would come out, take another dog, go in there. And I was like, what are they doing? And I'm just a very curious person.
Love it.
And so I just went up to her one day and I was like, what are you doing in there? And she was just telling me, you know, we do behavior evaluations in there. And so I started volunteering. I was like, can I help somehow? And so that's sort of how I got my start, just sort of like learning how to read body language. That's what I feel like that was really helpful for, because all I was doing was just annotating things for her.
Still very helpful. And I love that you ask questions and then ask how you can help, put yourself out there. Such amazing stuff.
Yeah. And And so, like, I got started with like animals other than my own that way.
Right.
And then it progressed to them letting me handle dogs. And then I moved out of the city and I moved to a place where I volunteered again at a different animal shelter. And again, I was like, what are you guys doing? Because all of the staff members were going somewhere and like they were going to be training, but I didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we have like staff training. And so I was like, oh, can I do that too? So, like, they let me do that. And then that led to me actually getting a job at that shelter as a care provider.
Awesome.
And so, and that was a shelter that actually did lots of training protocols and behavior protocols for each dog. So I learned how to even come up with like something like that and then implement it and have somebody also review it. So basically all my experience is sort of hands-on stuff. And then also just having that dog that started it all, which helped me learn about reactivity and stuff like that. And then I had my next dog after that was sort of the opposite. And he was just really solid with like environmental stimuli, but was just so busy in his brain
Yeah.
that it was just a different kind of learning. And so with him, I was able to do things that were more like finessing things. So, and we did competitive things. So we did agility, and that's where I went into then nose work. Because I, knowing him, like I knew that we would eventually do nose work, and I kind of knew that he would excel at it, but at the same time, because I knew that, I kind of wanted to do some other things first. So I kind of did some agility first and then went into nose work with him. And yeah, like so that's how nose work came to be. He was also a very, very curious dog. Like that was his personality, just being
Aww.
curious. And because he was so comfortable with things, he literally would go into any space and be like, what's this? What's that? Like a little kid, in a happy way.
No, it's so wonderful to see a relaxed dog who is like, this is normal behavior. I'm gonna explore and sniff everything.
Like his relaxed behavior was so quick and fast. Like it's
Yeah.
like little moving, like, like sort of like a Tasmanian, like a ta what you somebody might call a Tasmanian devil,
Aw.
but like, but in a curious sort of happy way.
No, I get it. That's a good baseline. I feel like I relate myself to like a really excited, curious, happy dog because I can't sit still and I need a lot of outlets, more than most. So, yes, we've all thought about what dog breed we would be. Don't tell me you have not. Anyways, and what were your dog's names?
So Coleman was the first dog
Aww.
that like sort of started it all, and Derek was my dog that I started nose work with.
Oh, I love it. We all have
Yeah.
that dog too that has, I think a lot of us have had that experience where we have a dog who is dealing with behavioral issues or even chronic medical issues. And even if you're not a veterinary professional, you're like,
Yeah.
I'm gonna learn everything.
Yeah.
So where are you now? I know we're gonna talk more about your awesome class and the things that you offer. But where,
Sure.
what does your career look like right now?
Sure. So right now, in terms of dog training, I mainly do private one-on-one training with clients. Training and behavior. I was doing group classes up until maybe 2 years ago. I'm sort of starting to start that up a little bit again with a friend of mine. I live in New York State in the Hudson Valley. And so that's sort of like the dog training that I'm doing. And I was also doing nose work training for dogs and their people
Love it.
for a while, and then I kind of switched and my focus to doing nose work with cats and their people. And because there really are very few people doing that, that's sort of my focus in terms of nose work at this point.
You just follow your passion and randomly fall into niches. It's beautiful. So, for everyone who may not be familiar with nose work, could you just briefly describe what it is and how it benefits animals?
Sure. So nose work is basically scent detection, using anything that the dog might value. And so when you're talking about it as an activity for dogs, most of the time, or most people will imagine it being a scent other than food, but you could use food. And or in conjunction with a different scent. So as a sport, they'll use essential oil odors
Right.
that are added onto Q-tip heads or cotton balls or cotton pads. And there are certain odors that you would use in competition. And so dogs learn how to have value for those novel odors that normally wouldn't mean anything to them. Because if you just, had a dog smell it and they didn't know, they would just be like, whatever,
Right.
what's that? Interesting. If you're not using something that the dog already values, so it could be a toy or, food, if like that, those are things that a certain dog might have inherent value for, and you don't even have to teach them that. But if you're trying to use something else, then part of the training is actually just starting to get the dog to want to find that odor. And so that's sort of part of the training that an animal might go through. And nose work, generally speaking, I believe is sort of like air, more air scenting as opposed to something like tracking, where a dog has their nose like continuously on the ground trying to track footsteps or something like that.
Gotcha.
It's similar, but it's not the same in terms of like the activity that we have put into boxes for dogs and people. But it's still using their nose. And so what it's good for, I'll kind of go over like dogs and cats kind of separately.
Love it.
For dogs, in the human world, the humans that have the dogs have a tendency to have expectations of the dogs that limit their ability to explore and to use their natural abilities. And so this is an activity that promotes both of those things. In terms of like what it brings to benefit dogs, like I think that like it's a way for humans to let go a little bit, because they kind of have to, because the dogs are the ones with the nose that can find things. We can't. So
Right.
Unless you accept the fact that you aren't going to actually be able to help your dog to find whatever it is that they're looking for, then the activity for the both of you is going to be more difficult than if you actually accept that fact. And it's a and I really like it sort of for the human, because it gives them a chance to really observe their dog, because they're not really the one that's sort of in the moment leading the activity. And so you can actually watch your animal and observe like how they're reacting to certain things, or what they do when they start to smell the thing that they're looking for. And it's really fascinating. And I think that it gives people like a better, like it makes them think that their animal's awesome. Like maybe they
Yeah.
already did, but like it gives them more of a chance to think that. And then with cats, Like, what I really like about this activity is I the way that I teach it, at least. So the way that I teach it is just with food. And so you could be somebody that doesn't know anything about training and still be able to do this activity with your cat because it's so simple. Like, when people do sort of like go too fast with the steps, like then maybe like they have some issues, but it's something that almost all cats and people could be able to do, and I really like that. And again, it's a really great way for the animal and the person to be able to bond, and the person be able to see how amazing their cat is. Because we don't really think about cats using their nose that much. They might sort of hunt with their ears and with their eyes a little bit more, but physically they can actually, detect odors with their nose and follow scent, similar to a dog.
Definitely.
So it's just fascinating. And one of my students had sort of likened doing nose work with her dog as having like a super secret decoder ring for like something in
Oh,
the world. And the dog is the one that knows and like is the only one that can reveal like the mystery
I love that. Oh,
to
that's amazing.
her.
I'm borrowing that. I love that.
And so that's sort of how I feel about the activity.
I love it. And nose work, obviously, there are so many things you could do as far as nose work. And there is competition nose work, but I don't think a lot of caregivers or shelters, essentially people who may not be in the nose work world, understand that. I love it from an enrichment standpoint and confidence boosting, stress reducing. I don't teach it professionally as far as competition, but you don't need to either. Like you mentioned, with your cat or dog, this is something you could do in your home or in your shelter. And on that note, let's say someone listening, because we all want to bond with our animals and we can all use more enrichment ideas for our pets. Let's say someone wanted to start nose work with their dog or their cat. What is needed and what would you recommend to caregivers if they wanted to start, like first steps, or even maybe some of your favorite resources, which include your awesome resources, of course.
So the really wonderful thing is that also about nose work is just that like the requirements in terms of like what you need are so simple that anyone with any budget or no budget should be able to actually do this, which is awesome. And so I won't maybe cover using a trained odor, just because then we're also then talking about sort of going towards the road of like more competition stuff or potential competition stuff, and then you also have need to buy stuff, at least in this conversation, although I might like reference places that people can go to that will use those things. But just on the most basic level, like the only thing you need is something that your animal wants to find that has a defined scent. So that could be food, that could be a toy. So just as an example, if I have a client who has a dog that is obsessed with tennis balls, and we can use tennis balls. So we don't have to teach the dog that they want to find the tennis ball. The dog already knows that they want to find it anyway. And so that's the sort of like in terms of nose work, and also like the ways of teaching it, especially with dogs, that are sort of like the traditional ways of teaching. There's sort of like two parts to the sequence. So one part is, this is sort of off topic, but I'll just sort of stick it in here anyway. So there's one part which is the actual search for the thing, whatever it is. And that's sort of like, if you're trying to play hide and seek and you don't know where the person is. Or you're trying to find your keys and you're literally moving through the environment to try to find it. Like that's the search part. And then there's also sort of like the part where what do you do once you get to that thing? So the part that I skip over personally in teaching cat nose work is that last part because it carries a lot of baggage. So what that means is, so for a dog, if you're training them to a, for example, birch or anise or clove, essential oil odor would be, what does the dog do once it gets there? And also, what is the criteria that is like correct? So for example, if there's a little tin, when the dog gets to the tin, or how close does the dog get to the tin? And what is okay? So if the dog sort of gets to it and is like 5 feet off, is it correct or incorrect?
Right.
Or if it noses the tin, is that correct? Or if it barks, is it correct? If it paws it, is it correct? So like all of that stuff sort of is like another part of the training. And so when you're using something that the dog just wants and can also self-reward, meaning that when they can just take it. So whether that's a ball or a piece of food, that sort of simplifies everything. And so because I teach cats that way, I'll maybe just sort of talk about it that way. But so if you have anything that your dog or cat or any animal that you have wants and it has a specific smell, you can just incrementally start to make it hidden in the environment. And so a lot of people imagine using boxes. And it's sort of simple for the human to understand how to incrementally make something go from easy to difficult using something that's visible to us. So I do like using boxes for that reason. But so just as an example, if you were in a shelter or at home and you just had four boxes, and let's say all the boxes at first might have food in it if we're using food. And that would just promote the dog to think that when they go out into this room and they look at boxes, they're like, oh my gosh, everyone's gonna have something. And you're just teaching them that in this scenario to sort of check things out. And then you might lessen them. So maybe at first all four boxes have food in them, then maybe three have them, then two, then one. Then it starts to become more like, okay, so which one has it? And maybe it's also more efficient if you actually use your nose to figure out which one does, rather than just sort of checking each one just because they're there. And so that would be a really simple way to start. And separately from like using boxes or containers like that, you can also play sort of like a hide and seek game with treats just in your house, just sort of in the open. But you would want the dog, if you're using a dog, to and also a cat, to know that that's sort of like the game you're playing. So for any of this, you just want to start at a level that you know that the animal is actually going to be able to do and finish. So if you just sort of like, let's say, like put your dog or cat in a crate or a carrier, and then sort of like put one treat like in a large living room, and then released the animal, they might be like, what? So I just got out of the crate or the carrier. I'm just gonna mosey along, and like they might not understand like what the context is. So you have to at first just put the treat right in front of where they're gonna be released from, and then slowly like make it harder and more difficult to find, just so that they understand what they're even supposed to do. And that's not even going through the other thing, which is just starting to add value to some kind of novel odor. And what I've been sort of telling other people about with like cats would be, for example, if you wanted to use like a tea bag or something
Right.
as like your target odor, like we can definitely teach a cat to understand that chamomile tea bags mean that like you're gonna get a treat when you find it. But just basics, especially if we're also then talking about like maybe not even in a home environment, then just using something that the dog already or cat already has value for is probably just the easiest way to go.
Definitely
Just
makes
as an
sense.
activity, not as a sport, but
Yeah, just for fun with cats. Obviously, I'm a huge, most of my caregivers, I teach them how to feed with puzzle toys, and one of the first steps is I say, take 5 to 7 treats, or if they have more cats, obviously we increase that, and place them in your cat's favorite resting areas, and then we may add a toilet paper roll, a half of one, opened, not folded in. Like I'm very clear with my criteria because. We say toilet paper roll, and I understand why someone might wring both sides to make it look like a piece of candy and make it really challenging and like,
Sure.
so we get better as trainers too to provide clear criteria for our lovely humans because toilet paper can mean lots of things or toilet roll. And on that beautiful segue, so I love that you mentioned, hey, you already have identified a lot of things, especially if you are a caregiver or even a vet tech and this animal comes into your hospital a lot or in the shelter. In most cases, you have identified one or two things that animal really loves, whether it's a tennis ball or food, because food is a primary reinforcer. And on that segue, because enrichment is such, it's a need and not a want in to take care of animals. And for shelters, this is such a wonderful thing due to the accessibility of it, due to the no cost essentially of it. Where would you recommend shelters get started in implementing nose work into their enrichment programs for both cats and dogs? And I know you've worked with a few shelters, and if you want to share an awesome, happy story, if they're okay with you mentioning them, that would be great too.
Sure. So like I said, like it's just the thing that's really great is just that there aren't a lot of like material requirements for like buying anything, and you can definitely just use stuff that you have around. I've had shelters, especially with cats, just use like paper cups
Yeah.
even. And so like there's just going to be stuff that you just have laying around that like you can definitely use. I've also even had some experience doing nose work type activity with a shelter that has free roam cats who are all free fed also. I mean, like that's sort of, that's taking like a large population who already has access to free food, and even just saying, "Hey, do you want to do this?"
Yeah.
So it can be implemented in many different scenarios. But so I would just say that the dogs and the cats are already physically able to do it. The part that is sort of like more tricky is the setting up part, because it needs to be set up so that the animals or animal that are going to be involved can be successful. And so that requires the person to at least be knowledgeable enough to make good decisions. And so I guess I would just maybe recommend that, like, if a shelter wanted to implement this, that they have at least maybe like one point person that could just delve into it, even at like the most elementary level, so that they have some knowledge of body language and criteria setting as well, because those are maybe the two things that like are things that I would want people to know about. Criteria setting so that they're setting up the search properly for the level that the animal's at, and then body language just so that they know maybe when they should not be stepping in to help the animal find the food or whatever they're hiding. And also maybe like when they've set it too hard and they're starting to see that the animals may be starting to be a little bit frustrated or stressed. So those would be things that I would want maybe the human to have knowledge about, because right off the bat, the animals are already physically able to do it. So that would maybe be the only requirement. In terms of like where they could go, I mean, like the fact that YouTube has so much stuff is awesome. And the thing that people are also going to find is that there are so many different ways to teach nose work, especially if you look into what people are doing in terms of training for dogs. And all of it is cur like I would generally say all of it works.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to even sort of say where they should begin, but just maybe even like looking at videos just on YouTube will just give you an idea of what's possible. And just sort of start with like the easiest thing that you can start with. And in terms of cats, just because there are not a lot of cat resources, I will just say that. So I run Nosework Cats, and it's an online class. A online self-study class for people that want to do nose work with their cats. I have been recently partnering with different shelters to try to find ways that they can implement nose work ideas at their shelters. And I say ideas because what they're doing as an activity might not necessarily look exactly like what people think a nose work search would look like. But what I'm trying to do is have the activity be the animals using their nose to find what, something that they want.
And I love it. And that's how I would define nose work, but I don't do competitive nose work. Like that's not my, I appreciate it. It's awesome, but I do it more from a, so, but like, it's interesting because that way is awesome as well. But I love that you note that because everyone probably has different definitions of it. So when you're looking up YouTube videos, it doesn't mean those awesome competitors doing really advanced stuff aren't awesome. It's just, you can still make a really big difference and not have it look like that.
And like I've done both, so like I know the range,
Yeah.
and also sort of like the thing, the pros and cons of everything. And my wish is just for as many people and as many animals to be able to try out the activity. And to be honest, like when I started teaching nose work for humans and their dogs, I tended to be more about focusing on the what I would call like the end behavior. So what does the dog do once they get to the hide, because that's sort of like the finessey part, and like it's fun to teach. But now that I've done so much with cats, and I see how awesome and amazing and fascinating it is to watch a cat just look for food, like I've completely sort of changed my view on like what nose work should be, or who, like how you should go about it. Like it's definitely opened me up to literally just playing with food, whereas maybe before I was not that way. And I would also, just for people that may have been more like me, where they were more competition oriented, like just that, like I was doing that, and I had never actually had my dog find food. Like I started in a way that was just building value for the novel odor, the target odor, but that it really is the same thing.
No, I love that. And that's where I think sometimes, because I'll be honest, before I got into behavior, and I was working in general practice, when I heard the word nose work, my brain went to bomb sniffing, to hugs, and really, I'm just, you know, really intense, amazing, beautiful stuff. And obviously now that I'm doing behavior, I teach enrichment, all of that lovely stuff, I'm like, oh, nose work is almost essentially how you defined it. Like something actually, that the animal wants. And
I was looking back at some of my videos from when I was competing with my dog, and I was cringing at like at some of the stuff that I was sort of like feeling in the moment that like I should be doing. And I like in the moment I was like, just like as I'm like watching the video, I'm just like, just let him do what he's doing. But like in the video, I'm sort of like starting to micromanage a little bit because I have a time constraint also. And like the thing that I really like about working with cats right now is that because there is no competition portion of that,
right?
Like right now there's no competitive cat nose work, and so we can just play with like the activity and like just the amazingness of like how they can find like the trace of an odor like all the way across the room or like in another room and then trace it all the way back.
Yeah, there's less constraints on our think, because we all have biased thinking and like boxed thinking. And again, I used to think of a long time ago, my concept of set work was like super intense stuff that was not accessible to most. And now I'm like, literally, hello, 4-year-old, hello, you know, 70-year-old, hello, person with cat, gerbil, what? And I'm like, all of this, it's so applicable and amazing. And I love all the human aspects you mentioned about how, again, sometimes we take control of our animals' lives more than we think, and we don't allow them to be what they are, right? Like we see a lot of cats and dogs who don't have the opportunity to do their species specific behaviors, and then we get to see them for behavior problems. But so I think, and also I always tell caregivers, and I'm sure you do too, as you mentioned, you see it with cats all the time, where once we start talking about enrichment and allowing these animals to do their species specific behaviors, which using their nose is a really big part, I'm like, it is so much fun to watch your animal do these things. Like even to this day, watching my cat or my dog explore something new, or like you said, find a scent, it brings us joy, just like it brings you joy to watch your child like killing a goal, like being like, get it. It's like the exact same. I love it.
Like, it's just fun to go, you're a genius.
We knew you were, but now we really, and that's the other thing. I think I talk about this, it comes up a lot, and I've been extra sensitive lately because I went to the pet store recently and I wouldn't recommend 18 out of the 20 litters there, and I had a mini breakdown. But anyways, poor public is not being served what they should be. But unfortunately, with cats, there is some more internalized stereotypes and concepts.
Yeah.
So I always tell shelters from an enrichment standpoint, like teach a cat to high five. It only takes very little time. Obviously, we have to educate your staff and invest in them as a team, but that cat will get adopted and you'll look like the most skilled person in the world. So I think also I love, which you kind of touched on earlier, this is important for dogs, but even more so with cats, because unfortunately it's because of some of those stereotypes that have been kind of ingrained, like every Disney villain is a cat. Like there's just a lot of things societally that we have done to vilify cats, and to have people understand how smart their cats are, we are instantly helping them empathize with their cat in all situations, whether they miss their litter box or they scratch something they're not supposed to, instead of being like, the cat's spiteful, which cats don't feel spite, but I know that sounds deep, but now they're going to be like, oh, my cat's really smart. I'm going to be more empathetic. Maybe I should call one of us. Maybe I should call my vet. And I think, I'm sure you've seen that a lot in nose work, because you started doing it for cats for fun. And then you're like, this is awesome. And people are really starting to understand how smart their cats are.
Well, like, to be honest, like, it was, like, I was that person. So, like, I have almost always had both dogs and cats. Right now, I am left with only a single cat. But for most of my adult life, I've had both. And to be honest, like, my cats were second-class citizens in my house. Because I was so busy, like, dealing with, like, some of, like, the dog needs that to me at the times just seemed so immediate.
Yeah.
And so when I lost Derek, who was my last dog, I had three cats, and I had one cat, Muncho, who is the one that basically started all the cat nose work. Aww. And he was always my quote unquote problem child,
right?
Because But at the same time, I kind of always knew that, like, he was the one that could potentially do something like this. So when the reason why I started with cats was just because a bunch of friends were doing online cat and online dog nose work competition, because it was right at the
Oh, well, I love that adaptability. Yeah.
And I was just like, everybody's doing this and aww, I want to do it too, but I don't have a dog now. And so I was just like, I'm just going to participate with Muncho and figure out what we can do, and it'll just be what it is. But then that just sort of was like, wow, he can do this. Like, yeah, we're using food, but, like, he's still completely able to do all of the things that I'm sort of, like, setting up for him, and doing it in a similar way that I can see the similarities and how, like, basically how similar they are and how not different it is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, I've had that moment where I'm like, he's a genius. Oh my gosh. He's a genius. He's not the problem child.
And I, to be fair, I still have those moments. I always share, because I very rarely see appropriate litter box setups from the start. But I also am very honest with my clients and say, hey, I'm a vet tech and I did not have, I had a litter box in my basement. I was that girl until I got into, so I was like, let's all be kind to each other, because, you know, you don't know if you don't know. And like I mentioned, unfortunately, from a societal standpoint, we love cats, but products aren't necessarily geared towards cats. It's geared towards humans' concepts of cats versus dogs, where the great news is positive. The products I'm seeing for dogs are being more geared to dogs, and I'm stoked about that. But unfortunately, I'm actually seeing a decline in the products I see for cats. So I think, also, if you have a cat out there and if you're like, hey, I need to do more, first off, awesome. That's the first step. But also be kind to yourselves, because she was a super awesome scent dog trainer. I'm a vet tech and we didn't know this stuff when we started. So thank you so much for sharing that, because I think we, especially in the animal worlds, I mean, I feel like I said this the other day about my own cat. There's, of course, medical stuff always. And I'm like, I suck. I think we're so hard on ourselves, especially with our own animals, which you have to realize you're there. I remember, this is super random, but it was something that was really eye-opening to me, because human and animal behavior, we learn the same. And I was seeing a psychiatrist for the first time. And because in vet med, we also tend to be perfectionists, which is not the best habit. So I was like, I understand behavior. I wrote down my enrichment and I have none. I wrote down my triggers. This is what got me to go through therapy.
Yeah. And
my psychiatrist, I will never forget this. They had me put my hand in front of my face and they said, what do you see? And I'm like, only my hand. I can't see. And they're like, you're yourself. You cannot apply everything that you know to yourself. There's so many limits, or your own animals or whatever. And that was something that was, like, really eye-opening. Like, I'm a vet tech. I'm a VTS of behavior or whatever. I should... No, if anything, it's way more challenging with our own family members, friends, animals. So sidetrack. But again, I love that you obviously talked a lot about the benefits for animals, but also the amazing benefits for caregivers, or even in the shelter, we have to deal with a lot of really hard stuff in the shelter and in vet clinics. And when you see a cat choosing to explore an open toilet paper roll and forage for the first time, your heart explodes. Yeah. It is the best thing ever. Or again, you're in a veterinary clinic and you see a cat, you're like, oh, their pain is well managed after their surgery. Obviously, we're going to look at other things too, but they're so comfortable. They're exhibiting species specific behaviors and that kind of stuff. Oh, gosh, it's so heartwarming. And oh, I see your beautiful cat in the background.
Yeah.
What's her?
This is Minnie.
Oh, Minnie. She's sidetracked by a beautiful cat. Sorry, everybody.
She's in some of the nose work demos too. And obviously, it's just nice to be able to experiment and with trying to make something work for different kinds of personality. So Muncho was the type of animal that is go, 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 I want. And so when you're trying to get an animal to find something, like that is, that makes your job easier as somebody that is trying to facilitate this kind of activity.
Yeah.
When you have a more sensitive sensitive animal that isn't as motivated by something that you might want to put out there, you just have to be a better human trainer so that you're setting it up so that they could be successful. And what does that look like for your animal? And so just as an example, like for Minnie, generally speaking, I don't do lots of reps with her. She might just do one or two. And I might use something super high value. So like she might get sardines.
Super smelly, awesome choice.
Super smelly. Doesn't get it all the time. And that way she thinks that the activity is fun also. So that, and that builds. So it's not just, you know, that one time, but like over time, she thinks that it's fun. And she can then do more. So yeah, with Muncho was like, he's the one that sort of makes you look good. Like sort of just on the surface.
Right.
So,
and I think that obviously I deal with a lot of very fearful animals or animals that have chronic stress and or chronic pain that we are now working towards managing. And when you have chronic stress or chronic pain, all of you amazing humans, you're awesome, but it may be harder, most likely, to think, learn, focus. So for example, like you mentioned, and there's lots of other reasons too. That's why we nerd out about behavior. It's very complex and every learner is an individual. But I think scent work is for really fearful guys. I'll start with something very, very simple before I'm even talking about wand play or wand toys. Again, we can go interactive cat toys. There's so much awesome enrichment out there. But I always start with scent work first because, first off, most animals are already motivated by something. So I'll use food a lot, but I have used scents. I had a medication training cat that he had chronic stress and pain, and we are working towards managing it. But to get we use grass.
Yeah.
I had to get real creative. And it makes you a better, again, that's why every animal that we deal with, whether we're in a shelter or vet clinic as a trainer, I've used scent as a reinforcer for three cats the beginning. So, and that's, I'll be honest, that's not something I was as skilled at for medication training, let alone, you know, 5 years ago. And it's so cool. Like I've gotten really invested in scent work and her class is awesome. I highly recommend it. It's super fun and easy because I know all of us, the online learning, it's a whole thing. We get it, but it's super fun and awesome. And then you can start nose work with your cats or in your shelter or at your vet clinic if you have time, because there's little things you could do that can decrease the stress and then get that cat the heck out of there, because we don't want them hospitalized. We want them to feel better and get the heck out of there. Well, thank you. Oh, go on, please.
I just say one thing? Because I remembered something that you had asked before, and I sort of went off on a tangent, I think.
We love tangents here. You're good.
But I kind of just quickly wanted to go back to like nose work in shelters really quickly.
Yeah, please.
So I worked with a shelter slash sanctuary called Our Companions in Connecticut, who did nose work with me for at least 6 months, possibly, maybe even longer.
Awesome.
Part of the thing that made it sort of like a good combination in terms of me being able to sort of like see what they were doing and also capable of with the facility that they had, or what the cats had access to. It was just amazing to see that in a shelter environment, even with very fearful cats, that it could be implemented in some way and done in a way that was simple. We didn't have to make too many adjustments between like what the exercises normally look like in my class for cats at home, just because they are a private shelter and the cats have either their own rooms or are doubled up, and we're able to sort of like make it so that each cat had their own turn.
Yeah.
But like even just separately from that, like I kind of started to say like we can actually do it with any type of environment as long as you keep your mind open to what nose work actually might be
Yeah.
for as a cat activity.
Because all
But like,
cats may not be comfortable coming out of a cage, especially if they're exhibiting fear. I'm not going to expose them to a bunch of stimuli in a new room, but you could still do nose work in a cage setting, 100%.
yeah, and so and also just the fact that in some shelters you're not even able to take them out of a cage or a condo.
Right.
And so we did do some nose work type exercises even in kennel. And also since maybe in your audience might be somebody that also wants to maybe experiment with that. And
Definitely.
if they want to, they can also email me because I'm always open to sort of partnering with a shelter to try to make something work. So
Love it. We're going to make this accessible to all. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I always like to end by asking what is something that currently brings you joy? For me right now, it's horrible, corny ass Christmas movies. But for you right now, what is something that currently brings you joy?
I'm making art. So I actually went to art school.
Oh, snap.
And
Multi-talented.
I didn't, I after I graduated from art school, I was making jewelry for other people as a job. Because that was actually my major, jewelry and light metals.
Oh.
But I did make my own artwork to show in galleries or whatever, or just for myself. But I hadn't done it in a long time, sort of when I ended up going down the shelter rescue animal behavior rabbit hole. I kind of put that completely aside. And so I feel like I'm just getting back to like doing that again. And so that's something that's been really bringing me joy, like being able to make art again. So,
Oh, I
yeah.
love that. That's going to help you get through the winter.
Yeah, definitely.
She's in New York. I'm in Ohio. It's rough. We have to find our
Right.
outlets, increase our enrichment. For I feel all of you with seasonal depression. Just saying. But we're out here trying. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. And I appreciate everything you do, not only for dogs, but for cats and humans. So thank you.
Thank you, Tabitha.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this and all the other awesome episodes and you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and or leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and I hope you have an amazing day.